From the Midas of Roseburg studio, KQEN weather forecast. Today, showers, some patchy fog, 46 degrees for a high. Tonight, showers are likely and 38 for a low. Tomorrow, rain in the forecast, a high near 46. And Saturday, rain likely and a high near 51. It's currently 44 degrees. KQEN news time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Let us take a look at the economy today. A longtime friend of our program, Dr. Elliot Eisenberg, an economist, joining us from down in Miami Beach in Florida. I've got to ask you, Elliot, just to make all of us grimace here, talk about the weather in Florida today. What are you experiencing?
It's perfect. I ran a couple errands this afternoon, and I put my top down on my convertible. Need I say more? I had to wear a hat because the sun was too strong. It's like in the low 70s. It's gorgeous.
And, of course, we've got rain, and it's 45 here. So, oh, boy. Well, anyway. That gives folks a little bit of a glimpse of what you're experiencing as you literally overlook the Atlantic Ocean right now. Let's talk about the economy and go a whole lot of different directions. First of all, kind of give us an overall view of how you feel the U.S. economy is doing, both for this year overall and particularly in this fourth quarter.
Great questions. The economy's recovered much more rapidly than I think every economist thought. The stimulus package or the help package back in March has made a profound difference. It's kept the economy going. It looks as though Q4 will probably have GDP growth of 2, 3, 4%. Nothing spectacular, but decent numbers. And it will leave the end of the year GDP down about 2.7, 2.8% from last year. That's not a lot given where we were. Now, the last global financial crisis we had in 08, GDP fell 4%. So at the end of this year, after all the trauma, we're down slightly less than 3. That's better than almost every single Western democracy. The U.S. hasn't been really good at dealing with the virus, but it was very good at providing fiscal and monetary stimulus. The problem is monetary stimulus is at zero. You can't do much more than that. And fiscal stimulus, well, we're waiting. We need another package. If we don't get another package, even if we get another package, the first month or two of next year are not going to be happy months. You know, states are closing down. There's lockdowns going into effect. First-time claims for unemployment the last couple of weeks are going up. Job growth is declining. We could have a mild one-quarter negative GDP number coming out in Q1. But then things start to get better. Injection numbers start to really skyrocket end of Q1, early Q2, and throughout Q2. And then the economy opens up, and Q3 and Q4 are pretty good. There'll be above trend growth. So we have 3 or 4 months from now through March, April, that could be a little dicey.
There have been different views about this next question. With all of that going on in the past several months, the stock market is kind of headed the other direction often, though it certainly had its ups and downs.
Oh, my gosh, the stock market, right, as you point out, it's had ups and downs, but the last down was essentially end of March, and it's had 6 or 7 or 8 months, whatever it is, of essentially going up pretty much nonstop. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One, interest rates are so low that the appeal of buying bonds is virtually non-existent. If you need a rate of return and not just safety of money, you have to take the risk of buying stock because it's the only place that's going to make you any money. Secondly, corporate profits are pretty good. Q3 numbers were really good. I mean, wages are very low now, and the firms that are going bankrupt, well, we don't care about them, but the ones that are surviving are doing well. Amazon and Facebook and Google and Microsoft and, you know, all these ones that we know about, Apple and so on, they're all doing fine, thank you very much. Chipotle, McDonald's, the bigger getting bigger at the expense of the small. So corporate profits are good. Interest rates are low. We expect a better year next year than this one. So this is explaining largely why the stock market's doing so well. Is the market kind of overpriced? I mean, I'm not a financial analyst. I don't give financial opinions on the stock market. I'm not an expert. But I tend to think it's a little rarefied right now. But given how low interest rates are, it's certainly explainable.
Is the market impacted at all by the election and a change of administrations?
That's a funny question you asked, because the election's still ongoing. That's part of the problem. You know, a couple months ago, even a month or two ago, I'd say, well, the big things facing the economy are coronavirus, which is now out of control largely. When the vaccine comes, we're still not exactly sure. Fiscal stimulus, we're still waiting on that. And the election, that's not quite over. So we have this Georgia election that's running. So far, the stock market and business is happy because they expect divided government. We know that President-elect Biden will get to walk into the White House on January 20th at around noon, East Coast time. Democrats have the House. And the expectation is Republicans hold the Senate. But there are these two special election runoff elections in Georgia. And if the Democrats win them both, which pundits say is unlikely, I'm not an expert there either, then if Democrats win both, they get the Senate 50-50 tie. The stock market's not going to be very happy with that, because that will give President-elect Biden a better and easier path to passing legislation on taxes and so on. It won't be easy, but he'll be able to do it in some way. If Republicans hold one, the market will be happier because the Republicans will keep in check the Democrats' spending patterns and tax increases and so on. So still wait and see.
Yeah, wait and see. I guess that's probably the way to look at it right now. As you look at the economy, kind of in terms of sector-specific areas, what parts are doing the best now? What parts are doing the worst?
Well, the parts that are doing worst are easy. The parts that are doing worst are the ones that have high contact, right? So the cruise ships, for example, bars, restaurants, gymnasiums, movie theaters, places where it's impossible to go and not interact with other people. Whether you want to or not, you're going to have to do it in a gym or a movie theater or something. Those are sports events, cultural events, museums. These places are really on their back and really experiencing extreme duress. Other places have managed okay. Restaurants, for example, maybe are not doing great in some cases, but they figured out how to shrink their menu, reduce their staff, have outside dining, have curbside pickup, do it through Grubhub or Uber Eats or whatever. And then, of course, the big chain restaurants are doing great. Pizza Hut, McDonald's, Chipotle, they're ripping the cover off the wall because they were already doing primarily drive-in takeout business. Now they're doing a little more of that. So the big have gotten bigger and the small have really suffered, don't have access to money. Manufacturing is another sector that's done very well for itself. We are not buying services in a country. We're not going to baseball games. We're not going to ballet. We're not going to bars. But instead, we're buying baseball bats because we want to play ball in our backyard. So we're buying all kinds of stuff. So if you make something, whether it's durable goods like a car or bricks for a house, which is doing tremendously well, or even a non-durable good like food or something, people are buying tons of Campbell soup for their house at home because they're not going out to eat.
What about sectors of the economy that are most affected by the COVID aspects? I think you probably already hit a lot of them in your last remarks.
Right. I mean, housing is the best example. It's spectacular, not good. It's the best. Auto manufacturing is doing very well. Also, manufactured goods in general are doing good. It's because we're home. We want to have a nicer home. We know that we have to have our kid has to have a schoolhouse room, and I have to have a Zoom room for work, and my husband or wife has to have an exercise room, and I want a backyard for the kids to play. And what I have now doesn't work, so we're going to build a new house or buy a new house, and then we're going to fill it up with all this cool stuff. We need a computer, we need microphone, and we need a Roku, and maybe a Sony PlayStation or something along those lines. So those are winners. Housing is the biggest winner, though, by far the biggest.
And one of the area realtors here was telling me, especially with some of our rural Douglas County areas, we've got a number of folks moving in from California right now to work remotely. And one of the aspects is making sure when you get that next house or new house or whatever, that you're in an area with Wi-Fi service that is at the level you want it, especially for those working certain types of remote jobs.
Oh, my gosh, that's critically important. And you should be getting people, refugees, coming in from somewhere else, be it Portland on one hand, Seattle, whatever it is, and California in general, because you're You can get a big house, relatively speaking, for the money. You get a big lot. You're safe and secure from the high density of Los Angeles or San Francisco or whatever it is. But you've got to have internet. That's critical. And you deal so often, many deals fall through. If they take their phone around the house and they see it's weak connection, they're not interested.
One of the things we've seen around here as well, sticking with the housing market for now, is we've got low interest rates. Around here, we especially have a low inventory. That's driving up prices. And that seems to be happening in a lot of places. Do you see any end in sight to that?
Not yet. No, I think the worsening of the COVID crisis, if you will, the crisis of the illness now in Q4 and part of Q1, I think that will prolong this process. But remember, there was tremendous demand before COVID began. So in December of last year, in January and February of this year, there was strong demand. Then the spring selling season disappeared because that was March and April. We were all locked in our houses. So when we get out, we have all this pent-up demand from before, and then layered on top of that is the coronavirus. Now, you know, a year from now, this coronavirus demand is totally gone. The March spring season, April May season, that demand has dissipated because it's long enough. But interest rates remain low and demographics remain favorable. The millennials are moving into home buying age. So this is a good, strong market for the future, although not as strong as it's been right now. It's going to dissipate a bit. And to go on a little more, I think housing's probably hit its peak. Existing home sales can't get any better than they are. There's nothing to buy. And new home sales and new home starts are probably maxed out or close to maxed out because of a lack of availability of land to build on and developers to develop and workers to build houses.
All right, going to take a break at Inside Douglas County. More from Dr. Elliot Eisenberg, the interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1247 at News Radio 1240 KQEM. Inside Douglas County, 1249, Lars Larson at 1. On tomorrow's program, outgoing member of the Roseburg City Council, Ashley Hicks, will be here. And Dr. Elliot Eisenberg, nationally noted economist, joining us from apparently the place where the perfect weather is, sunny, and you can actually get a sunburn in Miami Beach right now. Oh, boy. Dr. Eisenberg, talking about the economy. For many retailers, Christmas and the fourth quarter are oftentimes the most important part of positive overall cash flow and making it a successful year. How's that going to tie in with Christmas this year amidst the COVID-19 situation?
Well, it's changed, Kyle. It's not the way it was. So normal years, we think about Black Friday. And Black Friday, as you mentioned, kind of is this kickoff of the season the make-or-break season for retailers. This year, it's been a different story. A lot of retailers have had a very hard time, especially if they're selling services. You know, they're selling nice baked goods or something, or pretty pants or pretty ties or bow ties. They're really struggling. But overall, the season's quite good. Consumer spending has been very strong, in part because the recovery's been pretty good. We've made up about 55% of the 22 million jobs that we've lost, but we're still behind by about 10. And there was the fiscal money that came, the checks and the unemployment insurance top-ups and new types of unemployment insurance, extended duration of unemployment insurance. But not only are we buying different things, so we might be buying a Peloton now and not an airplane ticket. So airlines are really struggling. That's part of the reason. The other one is we've changed when we purchase. A lot of purchases took place earlier in the quarter. So there's not going to be an onslaught of business in mid to late December. People have purchased earlier to avoid bumping into other people in a store. So don't expect a great last half of December, last minute shopping takes place. People have generally been a little bit better organized as a result of the coronavirus. But it should be a good quarter all in all for retail sales.
As you talk to the members of the business community around the nation, what are you hearing from business? Are they fearful of this COVID-19 situation dragging on longer than they'd hoped?
They are, and they're also concerned about state closures and lockdown procedures. So restaurants have to close at 6, or I'm thinking California now, restaurants can't have any dining of any kind. So a lot of places, especially these high-touch industries, gymnasiums and so on, where they're on, they're off, they're off, they're on, they don't know what's going on, they don't know when the laws are going to change. It's very expensive for them to accommodate the rules. They're struggling enough. They just wish they could have some clearer guidance from the state governments that they have to follow.
And do you feel like, because you talk to people around the country, I mean, every state is handling this a bit differently.
They are. Here in Florida, it's pretty much do what you want. We have no mask requirements, one of only 12 or 13 states. The beaches are open. It's really just, you know, you do what you want and be as thoughtful as you want to be. The restaurants indoors are at 25 or 50%, but beyond that, that's about the only restriction there is. Different counties have different rules, of course, overlaid, but many of them also have no extra rules.
How about other nations? How are they being impacted by COVID-19?
Their results have been more successful than ours. The best place to look at is towards the north in Canada, right? In your case, the closest province is BC. But Canada's been about, their numbers have been about half as high as ours. And Canada's kind of in the general grouping of all the Western European countries. So, you know, our numbers are twice as high as theirs. So we've been less successful in stopping the virus. I think it's because of it was lack of clarity at the government level. Wear a mask, don't wear a mask, do this, don't do that. There was some lack of one message coming out there. So it was a little bit befuddled on what to do exactly. And I think the attitude towards government is vastly different than other countries, European countries and Canada. There's general trust towards the government. Here in the U.S., there's generally some reluctance to believe in the government. And there's a strong anti-government sentiment in this country that goes back a very long time. So those are probably the major reasons why we've done less well there. But on the other hand, we've been very fiscally stimulative, which has made up for a lot of the failure on the first part.
I was talking to somebody who was spending several months in Europe on a work assignment a while back. One of the things they said was watching the differences and how people dealt with the restrictions in the particular area they were. They happened to be working with folks from a number of countries on a project. And because a lot of other countries are set up very differently in normal times for their government, they said the Americans were really the ones that had the most trouble adapting to the changes.
Yeah, I think that's very true. It's this notion of, you know, this anti-government sentiment and this other one of, you know, to use the phrase on the New Hampshire license plates, live free or die. We are independent bunch. We do what we want. We don't want someone telling us what to do. We don't take instruction really well. And then if the message is befuddled, it makes it much more difficult. In Canada, I mean, I have cousins and family in Canada. If you violate your quarantine, the penalty can be up to, hold your hat, $750,000. And if you go up to Canada in quarantine, they call you every other day to check on you. And they know they have your phone number. They know where the phone is. If you don't answer the phone quickly, they assume something nefarious is going on. So it's a very different mindset mentality process. Right now in Canada, you aren't allowed to have any people in your house in Quebec, outside people who live in your house. That's how strict they are right now there. There's nothing even close to that in the states. And even the most restrictive states like California and New York and so on, they don't even have anything resembling that.
If people want to connect with you and get your daily insight, how do they do that?
Oh, thanks for asking. I put out 70 words on economics every day. The best way to do it is to go to my website, econ70.com, and sign up there, or text the word bowtie, one word, B-O-W-T-I-E, one word, to the five-digit number 22828. Again, 22828. You'll be prompted for an email address, and you'll give it to me, and you'll hear from me every day.
All right. Dr. Elliot Eisenberg, thanks for being on again.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure as usual. The time went much too quickly.
1250, 7 at News Radio 1240, KQEN.
You've been listening. listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.